You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The MVP showdown ultimately came down to which teammates of the MVP could make open shots. Tonight, it was not those of James Harden, and the Rockets, for just the third time in the last 17 games, took the loss in Milwaukee against Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks. 108-94, Milwaukee wins the game. Houston falls to 47-28. Milwaukee improves to a league best 56-19. On that unfortunate note, welcome in to first time in a while, a slightly unhappy episode, post-game that is, of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Tuesday evening, as mentioned off the top, the Rockets are losers in Milwaukee, 108-94. It's just their third loss in the 17 games, but by falling to 47-28, not only has it dropped them to number 4 in the Western Conference at the moment, a game behind Portland in the loss column for number 3, it also puts them only 2 games up in the loss column over the Clippers and the Jazz at 30 losses to secure home court advantage in the first round. So while that's still a very firm spot with 75 of the 82 games complete, and the Bucks are a very good team on the road, this is definitely a loss that you shouldn't feel especially ashamed about. Ultimately, the biggest reason, the Rockets just missed open shots. At the same time, they do have some work to do to secure home court advantage through at least the first round of the postseason. They do, as mentioned, fall a game behind in the loss column, the Blazers from the number 3 spot. But as I've mentioned for a while, I'm not all that prioritizing the number 3 versus the number 4 at this point, simply because you don't know between Golden State and Denver, who's going to be the number 1, who's going to be the number 2 at this point, as we're recording this, the 3 points recap on Tuesday, March 26th. We'll also talk a bit more about the Blazers in our segment 3 when we spin it towards the Jusuf Nurkić situation, the catastrophic injury that he suffered last night, and some of the implications that that means for the Rockets in the standings, and where we go over the final 7 games now, of the Rockets season. We'll talk about that in segment 3. Off the top, we're going to talk about, obviously, the game tonight. And it is a loss, and it's one that hurts a bit more because you let the game in Memphis that you lost by 1 in overtime last week slip away. That's a team that you should be better than. Now, granted, the Grizzlies since then have beaten the Thunder at home, so it's not like they're just a bad opponent. They are at least mediocre. They do have life, especially at home, where they've played well of late. So it's not a loss that the Rockets should feel all that bad about. And even between that loss and this one tonight, you've only lost 3 of your last 17 games. The reality is that because you started 11-14, any loss hurts a bit more than it should for the quality of this basketball team based on the headwinds that you are trying to overcome. So in terms of this loss tonight for the Rockets, it came down to the fact that between the MVP candidates, it was largely a draw. Giannis had 19-14, James Harden 23 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists. What it came down to was that the open looks that James Harden got for his teammates, he shot just 9 of 26 because in large part, the Bucks did commit extra resources to him. They also have a ton of length, so they sent multiple defenders. They had Eric Bledsoe trailing him to prevent the usual step-back threes going to his left. And they also doubled at times, and they left his teammates open. And between Eric Gordon and P.J. Tucker, they shot a combined 1 of 16 from the field. So I don't really think that the Bucks unlocked some magic way to defend James Harden. They are good for a reason. There's a reason why at 56-19, they lead the league in record. They are a really good basketball team. They are long. They are well-coached. They do have a lot of length on the defensive end, a lot of shot-blocking presence, all those types of things. Their point differential of plus 9.5 is by far the best in the league. For perspective, the second-best point differential is the Warriors at plus 5.6. So Milwaukee's a dominant team, they were playing at home, and with the Giannis versus Harden, all the MVP talk, of course, they were extremely motivated, the crowd was into it, all those types of things. As far as the end result, the 108-94 loss, it wasn't really about the MVP candidates. Giannis played well. Harden, even though he didn't shoot well on the stat line, if you watch the game, you understand that the looks he got were not especially open. The bottom line was that Giannis' teammates, they made their shots. They shot better than 40% from three. The Rockets, they barely broke 30, 16 of 52, 30.8% from a percentage standpoint. And a lot of that came in the fourth quarter when finally after the game was over, they hit a couple. When it really mattered, and especially the key teammates, the variables as I consider them, Eric Gordon and P.J. Tucker, again, a combined 1 of 16, and from 3, 1 of 13. Eric Gordon, we said Sunday after he got going in New Orleans with all those threes, 18 points in just 21 minutes, that he was the variable. That's what we've said a lot this month. When he entered shooting close to 50% from 3 on the month, tonight he did not score. He was questionable going in after the ankle he turned on Sunday. Apparently he had the adrenaline to play through it at that point, but the last couple of days it hasn't been 100%. I don't know if it was the injury. I don't know if it was just a random off night. Whatever it was, as we've said, the Rockets just are not an elite team without Eric Gordon producing. In an ideal world, you need him to create. But even if he's not creating, at a bare minimum, he needs to make some open looks, which between the way the Bucks defended James Harden tonight, the resources they committed to him, he got some open looks, and he simply did not score. He wasn't springy. He didn't get to the free throw line. By the way, the Rockets as a team attempted just 7 free throws. I thought the officiating tonight was not good. It was pretty clear that they were not giving James Harden, who had just 5 free throws, and all of them came when the game had already pretty much been decided the last 15 minutes or so. While it's a mistake, it's hard for me to get up in arms about it because the Rockets, the bottom line, they just did not shoot well enough to win this basketball game. So you can throw all the excuses that you want up there. The bottom line is that the Rockets, this is not the Golden State Warriors. If James Harden has 2 and 3 defenders thrown at him with regularity, he needs his teammates to make shots. And if Eric Gordon and P.J. Tucker go a combined 1 of 16 for 3 points, there's not much of a combination against a really good team on the road that's going to lead the Rockets to a win. So it wasn't that they were without positives. We'll talk about what those were in segment 2. Clint Capella, I thought, played very well, 17 and 11. Chris Paul, he had some moves in this game that were as encouraging as I've seen all season long. So the Rockets, they hung around, even with all these things going wrong. They only lost by 14 points on the road to the team that by far has been the class of the NBA this season. So let's not make it out to be some catastrophic failure. It wasn't. As far as actually winning the game, though, was Harden at his best form? Was it his peak game of the year? No. But it also wasn't the peak game for Giannis. The bottom line is that for one of those guys, they had teammates that stepped up. Eric Bledsoe in particular, 9 of 19, 23 points, 4 of 7 from 3. Chris Middleton had 13. Brooke Lopez had 13, including 3 three-pointers. The Bucks bench combined for over 30 points. As has been the story for much of the year, Giannis had the help. James Harden did not. And as far as what it means, look, if Eric Gordon and P.J. Tucker, we've talked a lot about P.J.'s struggles this month. He got a lot better when he made his 3 three-pointers on Sunday in New Orleans. If he shoots like this, that's a problem. I don't care where he defends or how well. And with Eric Gordon, we've said all year, when things were at their worst, Eric Gordon was at the low 30s in three-point percentage. This month, he's been close to 50%, and it's why the Rockets, even with this loss, have won 14 of their last 17 games. Those guys need to make their open shots. And that's not the only problems. The Rockets, from a turnover perspective, I know they had just 13, but there were so many, especially in the first half, that were careless. Harden with 4, Gordon with 3, underneath the bucket. The Bucks have a lot of length. They need to clean that up. The officiating wasn't great. The bottom line, though, Eric Gordon, P.J. Tucker, after James Harden, Chris Paul, and Clint Capella, the Big 3 foundation, those are your next 2 most valuable players. It's not even close. If they score 3 points on 1 of 16 shooting and most of their looks are wide open, 1 of 13 from 3, you're not going to be able to beat a really good basketball team on the road. It is what it is. As far as this game tonight, it's one of those I wish they'd won. It does drop them in the standings. a game in the loss column behind the Blazers. Also only up two games with seven to play over the Jazz and the Clippers in the loss column. So while home court in the first round is certainly still likely, it's not a formality. You do have work to do. And the game on Thursday against the Nuggets looms larger now, because if you lose two games in a row, all of a sudden you might be within one game of those two teams. Utah in particular has a really easy closing schedule. So it is costly from a standings perspective. Grand scheme, though, I feel worse about the games you lost earlier in the year that puts you at a point where you're still playing for home court advantage in the first round than I do this game. As far as what it tells us, I really don't think it tells us a heck of a lot. Reality, we've known this all along. For the Rockets to beat really good teams and to be a contender, Eric Gordon and PJ Tucker, they have to step up. When the Rockets are at their best, at least one, and ideally both of those guys are able to. If you go on the road against a really good team, in the case of the Bucks, the class of the NBA, and neither of those guys makes open shots, you're probably not going to win. And at this point, honestly, it's a testament to the Rockets, the big three, Harden, who had 23, 10, and 7, Chris Paul, 19, 9, and 4, Clint Capella, 17, and 11, that they even held within 15 points, losing 108 to 94. So it's a disappointing loss. At the end of the day, though, it's also not that surprising. So they need to be better. And if Eric Gordon and PJ Tucker shoot like this in the playoffs, especially on the road against really good teams, the Rockets aren't going to win. And that shouldn't be a newsflash. It is what it is. The variables need to step up. On this Tuesday, March 26th, they did not. Now, even with that, the 1 of 16 for 3 points for Eric and PJ, the Rockets were at least loosely competitive in this game. And that's partially because of the big three. Also, Daniel House Jr. off the bench, 15 points, 5 of 9 from 3. They weren't without positives. We'll talk about that in segment two. As far as segment one, though, let's call a spade a spade. The key variables, especially the guys that are the number four, number five in the starting lineup, they weren't there tonight, and the Rockets took a 14-point loss, largely as a result of that. Now, as we continue our way through our 3 points recap of Tuesday night's 108-94 loss by the Rockets in Milwaukee, we spent segment one talking about what went wrong. Largely, Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, a combined 3 points on 1 of 16 shooting. Simply not good enough from two starters. At the same time, when you consider the Rockets were on the road against a team that by far has the best record in the NBA at 56-19, that at plus 9.5 has the league's best point differential, was extremely motivated between the Giannis Harden MVP showdown, all the hype going into the game, national TV. If you had told me going in that PJ Tucker and Eric Gordon would combine for that, and Tucker in particular, boy, he had consecutive air balls at one point from three that were wide open. He was a PJ at minus 23, by far the worst plus minus of anyone on the Rockets roster. If you had told me going in that that would happen, I would have expected a 20-plus point loss. The fact that the Rockets were even remotely in competition range in this game is a testament to the fact that they did get a few positives. First, Chris Paul, 19 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists. I've said for a while, track Chris Paul's rebounds for how he's feeling. He played 32 minutes. He was rested. Go up 9 rebounds. This is a game in which Chris Paul went all out. Beyond the fact that he had his rebounds, just Google or Twitter search Chris Paul and you'll see the move that he put on DJ Wilson. It just dropped him straight to the floor. Chris also made 4 of his 9 threes. So as far as the tired line about is Chris Paul washed, I think we can safely say that if Chris Paul is healthy, and knock on wood, that's not a given, if he's healthy though, he may not be quite as swingy as a year ago, but he is still perfectly capable, especially on switches. Again, just ask DJ Wilson, of creating separation and getting the types of looks that he needs to put the ball in the bucket at an efficient rate. So I thought this was an encouraging game from him. He wanted it. Clint Capella, I've been really hard on him of late against really big team, which the Bucks certainly are. Giannis, Brook Lopez, Chris Middleton. Again, they have so much collective length. And overall, 60-46, they were plus 14. But Clint Capella, 17-11 in his 36 minutes, a couple of blocks, 8 of 11. He finished well. This was one of his most encouraging games in a while when you consider the way we were talking about him through the Boogie Cousins, the DeAndre Ayton, the Jonas Valanciunas games of a week ago. I thought Clint played pretty well, and he set a good tone. That's why the Rockets had the lead in the first quarter, in large part because Clint played really well. And the other guy in the first quarter that I thought really stepped up was Emmanuel House for the night. 15 points, 4 boards, 5 of 9 from 3. 4 of those came in the very early going, and the moment was not too big for him. This was clear from the outset that this was a statement game. Now, the Bucks won it, but they won it for the reason they've been a better team all season long. The supporting cast around Giannis has been more consistent than the one around James Harden. In the early going, though, when it was in the balance, Daniel House shot really, really well. And coming off what was such a discouraging performance against the Spurs last Friday, we talked about how well he bounced back on Sunday against the Pelicans, but that's the Pelicans. So what's going to happen the next time he plays a really good team, which certainly the Spurs are, the Bucks are even a class above that? Well, he came out even on the road firing. He played really well, even though he finally missed a few threes. Overall, 15 points, 4 boards in 28 minutes, 5 of 9 from 3. I thought he showed you why he is definitely going to be in the playoff rotation for this team. Now, they're still trying to sort out who's at the end of the bench. Tonight, both Kenneth Faried, sore knee again, Gerald Green, adductor strain, which he'll be out 7 to 10 days. So in terms of cutting it from 11 to 9, it's unclear. They didn't play Nene tonight, so really it was an 8-man rotation. I would say 8.5. They gave Gary Clark a little bit of run. Really, though, it's an 8-man rotation when you consider the usual 11. The 5 starters tonight, coupled with Daniel House Jr., Austin Rivers, Iman Shumpert off the bench. But you had Nene, who, because of the matchup, the athleticism, he didn't play. And then Rivers, or then Faried and Green out injured. Excuse me for getting tied up there. As far as the final playoff rotation goes, that's still in flux. I don't think we necessarily learned all that much tonight in terms of the bench guys. Austin Rivers, Iman Shumpert, I thought their defense was fun. You just wanted to make more shots. Now, Shumpert did make 2 of his 5 three-pointers. That's a good sign. Rivers, he still has not looked anywhere near the same from a shooting perspective as he did a year ago. At times, it looks like it takes a toll on his confidence in other areas. He still gives you some unique skills from a perimeter defense perspective that I don't know can be replicated elsewhere on the roster. At the same time, if he's not shooting that well, it's not like it's a lot to throw him in there anyway. Tonight, though, I won't say other than Daniel House Jr. that anyone particularly flashed. I also won't say that anyone was particularly bad. It's one of those games that is what it is. If Eric Gordon and PJ Tucker shoot the way they did, the Bucks are just the better team. I don't think anyone, as far as the final bench rotation spots, other than Daniel House, I think a game like this, if there was any doubt about Daniel House's mental state and, well, will he play in the playoffs because he's so raw, I think he's showing you that he is clearly one of the 8 or 9 best players on this basketball team. He will play. As far as the final spots, you're talking about, and assuming all are healthy, Nene versus Faried. Maybe you consider playing Faried at the power forward spot. If you do, then that could potentially eat in more to the Shumpert, Green, Austin Rivers minutes. I think all of that is still to be sorted out. Tonight, I really don't think any of them, considering the opponent, did anything especially good or anything especially poorly. I would say that House, he distinguished himself, but I largely think the Rockets behind closed doors, they already knew what he's capable of. This just highlights that even in a tough environment, he's still capable of stepping up. As far as the key takeaways into the bench, that's still to be determined as the Rockets go through their final 7 games of this regular season, and also hopefully Faried and Gerald Green get back healthy. Tonight, the real story, offensively, James Harden was okay. He had a few too many turnovers. You'd like him to make a few more shots. Ultimately, though, the Bucks defended him by daring him to have his teammates make more shots. And Eric Gordon and PJ Tucker in particular, they just did not make anywhere near high enough of a ratio for the Rockets to be competitive against what has been, over the first 75 games of the NBA's 82-game slate, the best team in the league. Chris Paul, Clint Capella, they were pretty good. Chris, 19-9-4. Clint Capella, 17-11. Also had 2 blocks. That's how the Rockets hung around. They stubbornly were in striking distance in this game. Even in the fourth quarter, they were then 10 at various points, that type of thing. Ultimately, though, they needed to make some open shots to really put pressure, game pressure, that is, on the Bucks, and they just were not able to hit enough threes. If the Bucks are making threes at a 10 percentage point plus better clip than the Rockets are, Milwaukee is simply the better team, and we have 75 games of evidence showing why. So, to me, I won't say it was a disastrous game. Again, Chris Paul, Clint Capella, Daniel House, they played pretty well. James Harden, he wasn't at his most efficient. I still don't think he played especially poorly. I just think we learned that the Bucks, unless the Rockets' role players execute at a high level, there's a reason why the Bucks have been nearly 10 games better this season, and their point differential is plus 9.5, whereas Houston is barely over 3. Milwaukee is just, or at least has been, a better team. And if the Rockets are going to get to where they want to go, Eric Gordon and P.J. Tucker need to produce at what Daryl Morey expected them to be entering the season and not the version that went 1 of 16 for 3 points tonight, and many of them wide open. So with that, I believe we'll wrap up this abbreviated recap of Tuesday evening's 108-94 loss in Milwaukee, because I don't know that there's any point in dwelling on it. It is what it is. It's a loss in which, if the Rockets don't make their open shots, Milwaukee is simply the better team. Tip your cap, move on. Hopefully you get a chance at revenge in the NBA Finals, because that means you probably beat the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. And even though the Bucks are a daunting opponent, they did get the sweep with this win, 2-0 in the season series. I think if the Rockets get another game against them this season, a series, they will happily take that challenge when it comes. So tonight, this is all we'll talk about for tonight's game. This is not it for the episode. In our third and final segment, which I recorded a few hours earlier, we are going to talk a little bit more about the standings, specifically about where the Rockets stand and where they are moving forward with the catastrophic injury suffered late last night by Yusuf Nurkic, starting center for the Portland Trail Blazers, who had multiple compound fractures to his left leg. Clearly that ends his season. So as far as what that means for the race for the number 3 spot and the number 4, and also as far as what it means for the playoffs down the line, potential seeding groupings up and down the Western Conference, and also what you want to cheer for in round 1 to set the stage for the matchups in round 2. We'll talk about that in our third and final segment of our usual 3 points recap as we wrap up tonight's show. Again, on this Tuesday, March 26th, the unfortunate final, Milwaukee 108, Houston 94. The Bucks were simply the better team. I don't know that Harden was better than Giannis. You just tip your cap, because what's really been the truth all season long, Milwaukee was a better team than Houston. It is what it is. Hopefully you get a rematch in a couple of months. And remember, to get this show every day, subscribe to Locked on Rockets on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked on Rockets. Now, as we conclude our show on this Tuesday night, March 26th, I want to spin our discussion away from Tuesday night's Rockets-Bucks game. Yes, it was a big deal. It's a marquee showdown, the MVP battle between Harden and Giannis, etc., etc. But sometimes over 82 games in the NBA, there are things that happen, especially on the injury front, that are bigger in the grand scheme than just what happens in one individual game. That happened late Monday night for the Portland Trail Blazers, who in double overtime of a come-from-behind win over the Brooklyn Nets, lost their starting center Yusuf Nurkic to multiple compound fractures in his leg. Just a brutal scene as he went down against the Nets. And obviously he's out for the year. Odds are he may not even be back for the start of next season as well. Just a brutal injury. And first things first, we wish him the best. A guy who has been a real part of the Blazers' renaissance season. So many counting them out after being swept in the first round a year ago. And yet they've overachieved all expectations. And for the past month, even with the Rockets playing as well as they have, the Blazers have been either tied or within one game in the loss column throughout this entire run, which of course reflects how well they are playing. So it looks like Portland, Houston, in some order, those are going to be the 3 and 4 in the Western Conference. So when you see a team that's poised for at least home court advantage in round 1 of the playoffs lose their starting center, a guy who averages 16 points, 10 boards per game, last night way better than that, the win over the Nets, he had 32 points, 16 boards, 5 assists, 4 blocks. Just a crazy game from Nurkic before the unfortunate turn of his left leg. Well, it's going to be a blow for the Blazers down the line. There's no way to soften it. He puts up those numbers all on better than 50% shooting from the field. He's their interior anchor, mountain of a man down low if they're going to match up with Nikola Jokic, Clint Capella, Boogie Cousins, any of the top-notch bigs in the Western Conference. Well, Yusuf Nurkic would give you a heck of a lot better shot than the guy who now becomes their starting center in all likelihood, that being Enes Kanter, previously of the Oklahoma City Thunder and New York Knicks, hashtag can't play Kanter. So, as far as what the impact is for the Rockets, I really don't think it offers that much of a change as far as the 3 and 4 seeds. For starters, Portland's schedule is not especially difficult in the near term. Atlanta and Chicago this week. It does stiffen up towards the end of the season. I know they have a home-and-home with Denver left, who's competing for the 1 seed. But really, as far as the Rockets are concerned and this race that's been within 1 game for seemingly weeks now, I don't know that Nurkic's absence at this stage, now that we're almost in April, really means all that much. Because we're talking about 7, 8, 9 games left. And as long as they have Damian Lillard, these teams like the Bulls and the Hawks, they'll probably be able to beat anyway. So I really don't think in the short term it means that much. And at least against lesser teams, Enes Kanter can definitely score and rebound. He will put up numbers. The problem with Kanter comes into play, especially in the playoffs, against better teams, his lack of defense, how he can be exposed in the pick and roll. Again, hashtag can't play Kanter, going back to when James Harden crushed him in that Rockets-Thunder playoff series in the first round a couple of years back. It's going to take until a 7-game series when teams are rested and the Blazers are playing upper echelon competition for that to come into play. In terms of the regular season, there's not that many games left, and especially against lesser opponents, I don't know if there might be all that significant of a drop-off. I think at least in the short term, you might see the Blazers rally around it. We know going back to 2008, the Rockets had their recent documentary on the year that they had the 22-game win streak. After game 12 of the 22-game streak, that's when the Rockets lost Yao to that foot fracture that ended his season. It seemed so crushing. And then the Rockets won 10 games in a row after that. Now, his absence did eventually catch up with them in the playoffs, but in the regular season, it really wasn't all that damning in the grand scheme. So, I would caution anyone to think that this assures the Rockets of jumping the Blazers because there's not that many games left to begin with. The Blazers might rally around it. And beyond that, as I've been saying the last few episodes here, it's not a given that you want number 3 over the number 4. Considering Golden State and Denver are now in a neck-and-neck battle for the number 1 versus the number 2, yeah, there are absolutely scenarios where the Rockets might prefer to be the number 4 and play a top-seeded Denver in the second round and be on the opposite side of the bracket from Golden State if they're the 2. So I really don't think, even if it did work to the Rockets' angle as far as giving them the 3 seed, I'm not convinced it, you know, maybe it swings it by a game or something like that, but I don't think it's anything dramatic, and certainly I don't think Portland's going to fall out of the mix as far as the top 4 and home court. So if the Rockets are getting home court either way in the first round, yeah, it might not even be that big of a deal. As far as where I think the Nurkic injury could be a big deal for the Blazers, and by extension, the Rockets, it's in the playoffs. And as far as the Houston angle, it's complicated, because assuming Portland doesn't fall out of the top 4, and as explained, I really don't think it's going to happen with only 9 games left in their season, just not enough of a sample size, and they're up at least 3 games in the loss column. They also have the head-to-head tiebreaker over Houston if they end up tied with the Rockets by winning 2 of the 3 regular season games. Well, if Portland and Houston, and barring a collapse by either of those two teams, those are going to be your 3 and 4 in some order, they're going to be at opposite sides of the bracket, so the soonest Houston could ever see Portland, even if everything went right for them, would be in the Western Conference Finals. So, assuming there's no collapse, there's no real direct impact on Houston. It was always unlikely and would require Portland playing a major upset, which even if they were healthy, beating Denver or Golden State in a 7-game series in round 2 without home court advantage, that's assuming neither Golden State or Denver are beaten in round 1, that was always going to be a tall order. So in terms of Houston versus Portland, there's probably no direct angle with Houston poised to be on the other side of the bracket, 1 and 3-6, slotted to play the 2 in the second round, the other in the 4-5, slotted to play the 1, assuming they advance in the second round. What I do think is potentially interesting, and I don't know if it's good or bad, it's more that it just opens up more possibilities in the Western standings, is the reality that now who Portland plays in round 1 becomes more of a priority. Because my assessment is that without Nurkic, and with Enes Kanter taking the lion's share of minutes at the center spot, I don't see how in the world you can expect Portland to even compete with Denver or Golden State in a 7-game series. With Denver, I'm not sure who's going to guard Nikola Jokic. With Golden State, you now, with the Warriors and the Blazers, Golden State has owned them over the years, especially in the postseason, and now you don't even have the one guy inside that can actually take advantage and offset Boogie Cousins, Draymond Green, some of the bulk that they have if there's one consistent trend to beating Golden State outside of the Houston route, the more common route has been throwing up a lot of more traditional bigs and beating them up on the glass. Well, Nurkic was their ticket to doing that. And I certainly don't think they have the overall switchability that Houston does to try and muck up the game to where the degree to which the Rockets have had so much success against the Warriors, 8-6 these past two regular seasons and playoffs. Also keep in mind, CJ McCollum is still out with a knee injury. That's not nearly as severe as what's going on with Nurkic. McCollum is expected back by the postseason, and I also don't think his skill set is as irreplaceable to the Blazers. They do, after all, still have Lillard as what Nurkic gives them inside relative to Enes Kanter. However, McCollum certainly is important, and it remains to be seen, even though he is expected back, will he be fully healthy? And even if he is there a chemistry angle and impact that you might have to worry about after not having a guy down the stretch of the year and then getting him back only maybe two or three games before the playoffs, if that? To me, that's yet another reason why I am very skeptical of the Blazers entering the playoffs, and of course, by extension, why it becomes a priority to serve Houston's interest to see them go down early and not have the Blazers as the potential sacrificial lamb for the Nuggets or the Warriors in round two. With Portland not really a threat against, should they advance out of round one, either the Warriors or the Nuggets, to me, what you want to see if you're the Rockets is Portland draw a team that will beat them in that first round. And, of course, the teams at the bottom of the West, they're all capable. Some of it depends on matchups, but the Clippers, the Spurs, they've played extremely well lately. The Jazz, the Thunder, they've been more hit or miss, but they have each shown you things. The Thunder with their top-end talent, the Jazz with their overall team defense. They also historically match up very well with Golden State. So to me, you want whoever Portland plays in round one to beat them at this point, because I just don't see how you can argue that Portland in round two, whether they're playing Golden State or Denver, doesn't matter what side of the bracket they're on, I don't see how you could argue at this point that Portland would have a better chance to beat or at least push. Because what you're looking for if you're Houston, ideally you'd have the other side of the bracket then beat Denver or Golden State, so you'd get a weaker opponent and home court advantage in the Western Conference Finals. But even if they don't beat them, at least tax them. Maybe make them go 6-7 games and earn it to where they're in a weakened state by the time they play the Rockets. The Blazers, with Enes Kanter in the middle and not Jusuf Nurkic, I just cannot see a scenario where they push Denver or Golden State, let alone beat, in a 7-game series. No disrespect to Damian Lillard, I just think that's the reality. So as far as what it means for the Rockets, it puts a bit more of a priority, in my opinion, on be it the 4-5, the 3-6, who does Portland play in round one? Hopefully it's a pretty good team, and then from there, as long as that team can beat Portland in a bit of an upset, although Portland did have home court advantage and get swept in the first round last year against the New Orleans Pelicans, led by Anthony Davis, hopefully that team is then able to do what the Pelicans could not a year ago and push the second round series against the Warriors or the Nuggets, whoever it may be, further than 5 games. So to me, there's no direct angle with the Blazers and Rockets almost seemingly locked in to be on different sides of the bracket, barring a collapse by one of those teams. However, I do think it now puts a bigger priority on who Portland plays in round one, because with the Blazers severely diminished at this point in terms of their playoff upside, then yeah, the interest for the Rockets, since you're not going to play them yourself at this point, I think that's pretty clear. Then what you want is, ideally, Portland could have pushed a team like Denver or Golden State themselves. Now I think it's pretty clear that that's not going to happen, so you want to cheer against Portland in round one so that that team potentially would have a better shot than the Blazers to actually compete with the Warriors or Nuggets in the second round. Anyway, this will do it for our 3-part show on this Tuesday, March 26th. As always, thanks for listening, and if you want more content before our next show, it won't be too long because the Rockets have another big game against the aforementioned Denver Nuggets this Thursday. This one will be back at home in Houston. The Rockets had, I believe, their 8-game winning streak against the Nuggets, spanning parts of 3 seasons, snapped their last game in late January against the Nuggets. That one was in Denver and without Clint Capela. This one is in Houston and with Clint Capela, the guy who over the years has posed so much of a matchup problem, especially with Jokic. So will that hold? Yeah, Thursday's game, could be a big deal. So we'll certainly have more coverage here at Locked On Rockets after that game. But if you want more even before then, the best place to get it is on Twitter. You can follow me at Ben Dubose. You can follow the show at Locked On Rockets. Also, don't forget our email address, lockdownrockets@gmail.com, our website, lockdownrockets.com, and our Facebook account, facebook.com/lockdownrockets. Always, you can get in contact with me, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, or even you, the human being. Don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. As always, thanks for listening. And remember, you can also subscribe to this show on the new Himalaya Podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets. Again, I appreciate y'all so much for tuning in and listening. And please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.